जय मां, जस्ट नाउ व्हेन अभिलाष वाज एडजस्टिंग द माइक आई वाज रिमाइंडेड ऑफ समथिंग विच इज पैराडॉक्सिकल. वर्ल्ड लाइफ इज फुल ऑफ पैराडॉक्सेस बिकॉज एंड दे डोंट गेट रिजॉल्व्ड एंड देयर इज अ लॉजिक टू इट, डिवाइन लॉजिक. बट बिफोर दैट आई वाज रिमाइंडेड दैट we hear the gospel of Mayavad from all over the world. By all over the world, I mean great thinkers. And still, they use an equipment like the mic. They travel all the way by whatever means to say that the world is Maya. This seems a very strange paradox. And Sri Aurobindo does mention that in one of his aphorisms. I'll not mention here. God laughed thrice. That one has to go all around the world to say that the world is Maya. If truly you are convinced about the world being Maya, there is nothing else to do but realize, and that's the end of the story. To say that I have to tell this to others, there are no others. There are no others. In the extreme illusionism, there is no individual. Even Buddhism, it goes on to say there is no individual. So if there is no individual, no true individual, there is a kind of a, often they say like the wave and the sea. This is another analogy which is given, which is very interesting. So people send all kinds of things so that, you know, there is the waves and there is then the sea. So when the wave rises, it thinks it is itself and then it lapses into the sea. So the whole question is, well, this is fine if you take as a static thing, but the wave rises by the power of the sea. It cannot move 1 centimeter up if the power of the sea is not there. So it is not wave rising as if it is an independent reality. Wave is rising because it is impelled by the sea. Wave is sustained, supported by the sea. And wave collapses back into the sea, drawn by the sea, and the matter doesn't end there. It rises again. And in that process, it moves forward. This was one of the things that watching the sea several times, I gathered that, look, this is how our life is. It looks like we are born, we live, we die. And then when we come again, we are moving 1 step forward. So there is also a dynamic movement forward. So we just can't use this analogy, it's a wave and a sea and therefore it's unreal. No. This is an analogy used very often. And if we really believe there is no reality in creation of cosmos, we should just engage with a personal experience of it and be done with it. That's the end of the story. But then something in us intuitively, and that's why Sri Aurobindo says, by reason you cannot arrive. Reason divides it. Very common example, there are people who say, oh, this person is so nice. Somebody will say, oh, so nice? You have not lived with him. He is horrible. And the third person will have his own theory. And then they will fight. Well, this person can be all these things together. Yes, there is a need to reconcile because reason has this big problem. It must find a coherent meaning. It is not able to reconcile. So it creates theories. So one of that theory is the karmic theory. We read yesterday where Sri Aurobindo says, well, it's only the superficial being on which all this thing is applying. But when we go into the depths, there is something else which is happening. So karmic theory is like a balm you apply to yourself. If you are suffering your karma, and if somebody else is suffering his karma, you know, sometimes very rudely, it's a balm. But it doesn't, you know, people have tried to explain, because how to explain then if this is all an illusion and the only reality is Brahman, how to explain? Then there is the other problem which comes up. So Sri Aurobindo has explained this. We had reached that point where the Ishwara and Shakti, they are one, the passive and the dynamic side of Brahman, of one reality. But then the fact remains that this is a world of suffering. We cannot deny it. We experience suffering and pain. So then the other question is how to make sense. Well, there is only one reality. So if Shakti is the Shakti of the divine, why there is evil and suffering and pain? So people have tried to explain it that, well, divine has made everything very beautiful. It's man who has spoilt it. So your fault. Swami Vivekananda said it in his talks. People say, oh, you're wonderful, wonderful, so good. He said, no, no, whatever is good is all my guru. Very wonderful statement, wonderful that was. That all my gurus, but whatever there are faults, that is mine. Excellent. But Sri Aurobindo takes us to another level. He says, man was not consulted when creation emerged. Man thinks too much about himself. Even when we say, I have done, I am the doer, I am done mistake, I am suffering, all this I am a sinner. Sometimes there is a race. Who is the greater sinner? Even that becomes a race. I am saintly. But if we take that ultimate experience that he is the sole doer, then we need to understand why, what happens, why the world is the way it is. And Sri Aurobindo will take us step by step. But first thing, there should be clear that by reason, purely by reason, it's impossible to reconcile this paradox, because reason is not equipped. Reason sees either this or that. So when it looks at that and thinks, oh, there was something very different, it says error. Or when it looks at this, oh, there is a divine reality. No, not possible. This is the problem of reason. So is there a faculty in us which can reconcile? First faculty which is there is intuition. And leaving aside the higher, you know, the deeper intuition. Intuition is not clairvoyance, etc. But intuition, the typical is understanding of intuition is the story of Mahabharata, where Yudhishthir, all the Pandav brothers go to fetch water. Very symbolic story, but we'll take it in a shortcut form. So Draupadi is thirsty and all of them go to get water. No, first, of course, her favorite is, of course, Bhim. I'll get. And Bhim goes there, and suddenly as he is going to take water, the Yaksha appears. He says, hold on, you can't take it. He says, you dare stop me? No, no, you have to answer a question. He says, I'll answer a question after doing my bit. As he does that, he falls. He becomes unconscious. After some time, Arjun comes, Nakul comes, all of them. Then finally, Yudhishthir comes. So when he stops Yudhishthir, he says, okay, ask me a question. So he asks a question, what is the most surprising thing upon earth? This is a question I ask all the Mayavadis also. What is the most surprising thing upon earth? So Yudhishthir, Kim Asharyam, that's how it is known. So Yudhishthir says, very cryptic answer, you can take it both ways. He says that every day we see people die, but still we behave as if death will not strike us. So you can take it either ways. There is a pessimistic way of looking at it. See, death is the only thing certain. But these stories are not as simple as that. One way, this is how reality is. Death is the ultimate reality. But people live as if, behave as if they are never going to die. But the deeper truth is, these stories are not superficial stories. That however much our senses may show us that there is death, a deeper intuitive sense in us is always aware of immortality. Even the most avowed Mayavadin, still he says all is nothingness. But if he has a physical illness of an extreme kind, still consults a doctor, which is a paradox. Okay, I am not saying that one should die or anything, but take it in that spirit. Divine has given, it's okay, one day karmas are being settled, therefore I'll be taken. No, it doesn't work out. Because there is in us intuitive sense of a secret immortality. This is what Sri Aurobindo has mentioned in the human aspiration. Another intuition, it's very interesting. You may say world is Maya. It has done a lot of damage, no doubt, to the Indian psyche especially. But still, we may say world is Maya, everything. But somewhere within us, intuitively, we want the world to be a perfect place. We fight over it. Fight with each other. Quarrel. The other person should be perfect. Hey, if it's Maya, why do you want the other person to be perfect? There is nothing like perfect. It's all a play of Maya. It's all your two extremes, chemical glands, or you take the other extreme. It's all an illusion, karma. A person who has got a quarrelsome partner should be very happy. My karma are being dissolved. But no, there is in us an intuitive sense that life should become perfect. Should be perfect. And that's why at one place, the mother says, Sri Aurobindo also says, the moment people become aware that it is possible, the supramental transformation implies that, then they will not opt for that, because very naturally we want perfection. But we have been told it's not possible. It's such a kind of, I won't use the word brain drain, but use a new term, soul drain. Plenty of people who could, do beautiful things, just want put all their energies into running away from the world. Of course, some good is done. That's by default. Yajna goes on. So if we are in world, as long as we are part of the world, even a most selfish person will end up doing some good. That's a different story. But the point is that this mayavad, it is contradicted by the deeper intuition of man. This is where Sri Aurobindo leads us. And there are many other intuitions. That's why, even the most pessimistic person, most pessimist, mayavad plus pessimist, he'll still watch. Aaj kya khabar hai? Maybe some good news we'll hear. And sometimes I've been surprised that one doesn't believe in world, illusion, that it's all karma, it's all world going. But still you are waiting for the share market to go up. So this is because deep inside we carry this idea that world can become beautiful, maybe magically. And this idea is there in several places. And only one I'll read before entering into the live divine, because Sri Aurobindo mentions it. He mentions it in the next chapter, but in which we are going to enter. But it is very beautiful that it's not only Sri Aurobindo speaking about the perfectibility, the golden age. He quotes Nammalvar. It's one should read, because we are in Pondicherry, we should know about the Tamil saints. There are 12 saints. And one of them is feminine, Andal. Two are Brahmins, other all different castes. And they belong to the Vaishnava tradition. And long back, before the, about 3000 BC, which is after the Mahabharata war, of course, these saints here all around were singing such wonderful hymns. Sri Aurobindo has translated some of them from Tamil to English. Thanks to, once somebody asked me, why no Tamil and all this? I said, have you heard or read Sri Aurobindo literature? He has made a whole list of equivalence between Tamil and Sanskrit terms. Not terms, root sounds. So anyways, that's those who don't want to see, don't see. So this is where Sri Aurobindo takes his name in the Life Divine in the next chapter. But we'll read it now and then we'll start. Nammalvar's hymn of the golden age. He saw it coming. And another is Andal's beautiful poem of, she's saying, my marriage is going to take place with the Lord and he's coming. It's too deep and too delightful. And she says, I am drowned in the ocean of ecstasy. But we'll not read that. We'll read Hymn of the Golden Age, which Sri Aurobindo mentions. It's glory, glory, glory. Somebody 4,000 years back is seeing this vision. For life's hard curse has expired. Swept out are pain and hell, and death has naught to do here. Mark ye, the iron age shall end. Same thing is in Christian mysticism also. Lo, where John of Patmos, Shelley dreamed about it. For we have seen the hosts of Vishnu. Richly do they enter in and chant his praise and dance and thrive. We have seen things full sweet for our eyes. Come, all ye lovers of God, let us shout and dance for joy with oft-made surrenderings. Why do they roam on earth, singing songs and dancing, the host of Krishna, who wears the cool and beautiful tulsi, the desire of the bees. We are like bees, you know, sticking around. We may sting each other, you know, bees can sting each other. But around the flower we all gather, not for stinging the flower, but for drinking the nectar. I love this analogy. The iron age shall change, it shall fade, it shall pass away. This reminds us one of Sri Aurobindo's poem, In the Moonlight, where he says this. The iron age has ended. Only now the last fierce spasm of a dying world shall shake the nations, and when that has passed, earth vast of its ills shall raise a fairer brow. The gods shall be in our midst. Mother speaks of that in 1926. The mighty golden age shall hold the earth, and the flood of the highest bliss shall swell for the host of our dark-hued Lord. Dark-hued like the cloud, dark-hued like the sea. Widely they enter in, singing songs, and everywhere they have seized on their stations. The host of our Lord, who reclines on the sea of vastness, behold them thronging hither. Me seems they will tear up all these weeds of grasping cults. And varied songs do they sing, our Lord's own hosts, as they dance, falling, sitting, standing, marching, leaping, bending, and many are the wondrous sights that strike mine eyes, as the magic, as by magic have Vishnu's hosts come in and firmly place themselves everywhere. Nor doubt it, if fiends and demons will remember book 6 in Savitri, canto 1, when Narad sings. As he comes, he sings of Vishnu's birth. As he comes, the demons wept with joy, knowing their end is near. Take heed, he shall never escape, for the spirit of time will slay and fling you away. These hosts of the Lord of the Discus, they are here to free the earth of the devourers of life. Earth is not talking of somewhere else. Disease and hunger and vengeful hate and all other things of evil. And sweet are their songs as they leap and dance, extending wide over earth. Go forth, ye lovers of God, and meet this host divine with right minds. Serve them and live. And finally, because it's a long poem, I'll just read. And he sees the coming of the Vedas once again, and sees that, you know, all these God lovers. Okay, last one I'll read. Go forth and live by serving our Lord, the deathless one. With your tongues chant ye the hymns, the sacred rigs of the Vedas, nor err in the laws of wisdom. Oh, rich has become this earth in the blessed ones and the faithful who serve them with flowers and incense and sandal and water. In all these rising worlds, they have thronged and wide they spread those beauteous forms of Krishna. The unclad Rudra is there. Indra, Brahma, all the iron age shall cease to be. Do we but unite and serve these. This is exactly the mother's description just before the Siddhi day, when she saw all these gods come incarnate in the disciples here. And this is the age which she actually made it descend. But the problem was that Sri Aurobindo wanted still one step further. Perfect perfection. A golden age that never ever goes back. And if this can be, why not that? And that's why he says that not yet. And then the mother dissolves everything and they work toward the supramental perfection. So there are many hints, both intuitively as well as if we really look upon this earth, we'll see that there are many hints. So then how to understand? And he says, first of all, intellectual mind is not the way. We have to look at it from above downwards. So the term that I used, the scientific term, is top-down view. We are here, we are trying to conceive reality based on here. Here there is suffering and pain, I experience suffering and pain. So one way is that I say, like a manician creator, he is good and evil. If you serve him, he'll be good to you. If not, he'll kill you. he will make you torture in hell. So this is the Manichean creator. And then we can give any meaning to good and evil, including killing others in the name of God. Or I can say that, well, creator is very good, but I am my karma, sorry, you know. But animals also suffer, poor fellows. You can't tell them, and much of the chaos is done by all kinds of beings anyways. So this is the, as long as we stand on this ground, we will never get the true view. Intuition can give us hint, but as we have seen, intuition can tell us of the rays of the sun, not the truth itself, because it will show us one side. For instance, in the hymn we read, there is a mention of the golden age, wonderful age. It has seen something. But what he has not seen is the dark age will come before that. What he has not seen is that, you know, there will be all kinds of narebaji and woke and God knows what. Yes, in summarily all this will wash away, which is true, but the total truth. So what we should do, we should first find that one reality. So this remains. All life is yoga. Doesn't mean I'll live life any which way it is and it becomes yoga. First thing Sri Aurobindo says needfully is to find that divine reality. But what divine reality? Again, at so many planes, there are so many experiences of the divine, each valid. Now Sri Aurobindo, who had all these experiences, he had the Nirvana experience, the height of illusionism or Buddhist experience. He had the Vasudevam Sarvamiti experience, which is the height of the Gita. He had the experience of Parabrahman. So one may ask him, why are you going for the supramental? That's where the catch lies. Is there a secret truth where all these experiences can unite? And not only these experiences of the many sides of the divine, but also our everyday experience of our life as we experience it. That is where the supramental necessity. Often people ask, well, you cannot solve the riddle. You can experience the divine. That's necessary. But you cannot solve the cosmic riddle. And he is here to solve the cosmic riddle. So he speaks about another one we know. Page 483, 481. For to know the real truth of the world, in reality, it must be seen from the superconscient awareness. From the view of the superconscience that maintains and surpasses, and by surpassing knows it in its truth. And no longer from the view of the consciousness that is maintained by it and surpassed by it, and therefore does not know it. Or knows it only by its appearance. So if you look at the world's appearance, this is the contrast. So what is this view he is referring to from the other side? Is the view that we see in the Kena and the Isha. Though people interpret Kena in both ways. But what does the Kena say? Yan mansana manute yena hurmano matang tadeva brahmantam viddi nedam yadidam upasate. That first you find that truth. Not this which men are running hereafter. First you find that truth. Then you will know. And then it gives at the end an answer that when you find that, you will see the honey, madhu, everywhere. That's what the guru is meant to carry. It describes the guru as somebody who is full of honey, sweetness inside. So that is the first necessity. If we remain where we are, we cannot understand. The mystery of the universe must have a divine sense to the divine. Not a human sense, not the way we understand. Punishing and rewarding and judging. I mean, if divine is busy doing that, he would be just like Sri Aurobindo writes in one of his letters to his sister, Sarojini. She says, you know, I went home and it was nice, everything, but after from there, when I have come back to Baroda, and here he has to eat what the rasoiya is making every day, all full of mirchi, chili, and he has to swallow it. He says, I am reminded of the story that, you know, all the people roasting in hell are given one day to get cooled in the North Pole. So they go to North Pole to get cooled. He says, this sounded to me as a worse kind of punishment because like one day in a week you give food to the poor. Now, you know, 6 days, now they are not enjoying the normal food. Now they are looking for that seventh day when a savior will come and give them food. That's not the way. The divine is much more, you know, he knows what he is doing. The caterpillar, if you prematurely cut, it doesn't become a butterfly. So he says, the mystery has to be understood from the divine. How the divine looks at it. And if you really look at even our stories from, let's say, the Bhagavat Puran, which I am, you know, we are doing class these days, one will see very clearly that all this idea of Papa and Punya just washes out of the window. There is something else which we have not understood. And there we look at it very differently. And so he gives a little bit of secret. If the reality alone exists and all is the reality, the world also cannot be excluded from that reality. The universe is real. If it does not reveal to us in its forms and powers the reality that it is, if it seems only a persistent and yet changing movement in space and time, this must be not because it is unreal or because it is not at all that, but because it is a progressive self-expression, a manifestation, an evolving self-development. So here he gives a hint. So I remember in my small then first book, Death, Dying and Beyond. So, you know, you try to practice all kinds of things in your own way. So I was asked to write, so I wrote. I said, don't put my name because I don't want my name anywhere. I didn't know that is another egoism. But that time, you know, it was. So I got a rude shock. And someone told me, no, your name is not being put because somebody will give you credit. But your name should be there because if there is a problem, who has to be accountable? You have to be accountable. I said, oh God, I didn't realize it. But this is what we have been doing. That no, God didn't create the world. He is ready to give the account. He is ready to take the burden. But we don't want, no. You rest in your chamber. You be the witness. We are handling it now. We have created karmic theory. You don't worry about it. He says, I am worrying. I am coming. I am coming as avatar. I am coming as the compassionate teacher. There is a purpose in Shobhindu. That's why the highest vision Shobhindu unfolds in Savitri. There is a meaning in each curve and line. There is nothing which is random. All is a single play. When you read that, it's such a vast vision because it's divine vision. Without becoming the divine, one cannot give this vision. Always there will be a division, not vision. So, all finites are in their spiritual essence the infinite. And if we look deep enough into them, manifest to intuition the identical and infinite. This is so true. Very simple example. Scientific example. This is finite as a card. If you keep making pieces, will there be an end? No. Even at the atomic level, there won't be an end. You can break an atom any number of times because it is infinite. That's the beauty of creation. Everything holds within itself the infinite. But yes, for the sake of understanding, we have, no, don't behave like this. This is not infinite. Yes, to our everyday dealing, it's a small little card. So that's how every finite holds in itself the infinite. And we have to deal with both. We cannot just, deal with one. And the other example that, well, we can say it is lesser to an extent, yes. So, Shobhindu gives this example elsewhere, but we can take it here. That, Vyasa is, there are many things in his name. All the Puranas, most of the Puranas, and Mahabharata, of course, and the Bhagavatam. Bhagavat is a Purana. I mean, only Shobhindu beats him in terms of his writings. But let's say if you ask Bhagavat that, ask Vyas Rishi, what Mahabharata is. Mahabharata, you couldn't have written. You are such a great Rishi. No, he'll say, excuse me, I take responsibility for what I have written. And if you stop the Mahabharata midway, then there will be horror. So to get the sense of Mahabharata, you have to go back to Vyas. It's very interesting, because once somebody was almost not arguing, but people throw allegations. What is there? Even in Ramayana we see Rama, you know, that misogynist tendency, abandoning Sita. I said, if you want to understand the action of Rama, you have to go to the heart of Rama. Then you will know whether he loves Sita or not. Now, when you know he loves Sita and yet this is doing, then you have to understand why he has done. But if you form a judgment based on appearance, you will never understand. So this is exactly what we have been doing. So author and the book are one. Of course, author is capable of many more books. There is no doubt about that. But to separate them as if they are two realities is not true. The absolute can have no need of anything. That's true. But still there can be not coercive of its freedom, not binding on it, but an expression of its self-force, the result of its will to become, an imperative of a supreme self-effectuating force, a necessity of self-creation born of the power of the absolute to set itself in time. Because this is the other argument. After all, absolute is absolute. He has no necessity to create. True. But equally, he has no necessity not to create. How we can bind him to either this or that? The fact is he has created. Not out of necessity. Then why? So there is a very nice term in Sanskrit. Swanta Sukhai. He didn't create for us. For his own delight. That's how it is ultimately described. So he has created not because there is a necessity. Not because there is a compulsion on him. But there is the necessity of this delight which is emerging in him. This imperative represents itself to us as a will to create, a will of self-expression. But it may be better represented as a force of being of the absolute which displays itself as a power of self in action. So, Ishvara and Shakti is leading us along that trail. So then, other question, okay, everything is divine and is Shakti. So, whatever I am doing is right. No. Here comes the problem. If you are a child, in a child consciousness, you perceive certain things, you don't see the truth of things. A child hits his mother, 2-year-old. Why? Because mother is insisting. Pehle naha, phir kha. Child thinks mama is very cruel. Mama doesn't take offense, mama smiles. After the bath, he says, I am enjoying the food, thank you mama. Forgets about it. But a 20-year-old treats this mother this way. Now, the scene is different because he has grown up. He is expected to be grown up. And when he grows up, the vision changes. Then what does a child see? Most children see it like that. Parents always understand the child in a different way. But children, most children will understand. Mummy ne mar lagai thi, koi baat nahi. It's okay. It helped me at some level. They accept many things which otherwise, I mean, exceptions apart, because they understand as they grow up. And that's why it is said, when you become a mother, then only you understand what really is motherhood. So equally we can say, when you become, one becomes divine, that one can truly understand the ways of the divine. So this is what is being described here. So what is it that we need to discard? If is everything divine, then so we just continue with life as nowadays the thing is flow with life. Flow, what is it called? With the flow. So sometimes people write, I am going with the flow. I said, see which flow? You must be careful. Huh? There is a tamas flow, sluggish flow. There is a rajasic flow. There is a sattvic flow. There is the flow of the God. There is the divine flow. Which flow? Then people get a little confused because they had clarity before that. So sometimes confusion is required to arrive at a greater clarity. So I am going with the flow. So then everything is all right. Is it true that divine is doing everything? Now comes the other aspect. The one thing that can be described as an unreal reality. Still it is unreal reality because it's temporarily, that's how we look at it. It's an unreal reality. The sense of separation. I am separate from that divine. It's like a finger believes that I am separate from the whole body. What happens when a finger believes that, or any part of the body believes that I am separate from the rest of the body? It develops cancer. it multiplies, it eats up everything else. Ultimately, it destroys the very source from which it was eating. Like many people are doing to Bharat Mata. Because that's the logical end. When you start finishing, because you believe in a separate reality. So he says the only thing that can be described an unreal reality, still that person believes, is identified with that, is our individual sense of separativeness and the conception of the finite as a self-existent object in the infinite. This is that as if I exist by myself, in myself, and God is somewhere else. This is the problem. He is taking us to the real problem. This conception, this sense, are pragmatically necessary for the operations of the surface individuality and are effective and justified by their effects. They are therefore real to its finite reason and finite self-experience. But once we step back from the finite consciousness into the consciousness of the essential and infinite, from the apparent to the true person, the finite or the individual still exist, but as being and power and manifestation of the infinite. So complete it is. So what Shivabinda is saying is, at one level, when we live in the ego, I am the doer, I am the giver, I am doing this. This is one level. Necessary, because that's how you, at least if you say, no, you are not the giver, God is doing it, so then I'll not give. It doesn't matter. So you start by that. Then you reach that point where Rahim is there. So Rahim is a giver and he is a great mystic, we all know. So he used to be very fond of Tulsidas. And one day Tulsidas tells him, when you are giving, why do you keep your eyes below when you are giving? So he says, because if I look up, I'll see in the eyes of the receiver that, you know, I am the giver, I'll develop ego and all that. So I'm not, it's all he is giving. It was his way, but still there is a veil of the ego. But he has to do what he has to do. It doesn't mean that, okay, I am not the giver. But what does Dvijendra Lal Roy say? Something very amazing. We all know his famous bhajan. The first, I may forget a little bit. Sokali Tumari Iksha. You are the one who's... Then some words and then the one line which appeals to me most. Tomar Kormo Tumi Koroma. Loke Bole Kori Ami. Your deeds you are doing, but still now there is the true individual who becomes just an instrument or a channel. He has to play his part. Receive and be a free-flowing channel. Now this is giving us the basis of the yoga. Means ego will prevent, block the channel. Desires will deflect the force that is coming in. Ambition will deviate. We still have to be, because if you take the extreme of Mayavad, then how does it matter? If you take that idea that divine is doing everything, how does it matter? He is doing everything, but this world has been created for the joy of multiplicity. So the false individual which thinks separate must be removed, which is the ego self. And the true individual, which is the psychic being, that must receive and transmit. So very beautifully he is giving us a sutra. He will develop it again and again. So page 483. For if all other experiences of the individual consciousness in the universe are illusions, then what this takes up another, he has described this in Savitri very beautifully in book 6 canto 1, when Narad makes the pronouncement and queen says, what kind of God has created this fate for my daughter who is so lovely? And you talk about God, you are chanting about Vishnu. Maybe, who cares? All this is illusion, including the God is an illusion, because ultimately, the Buddha took that step. Shankara took the same step but called it one. So, this is the other one. For if all other experiences of the individual consciousness in the universe are illusions, then what guarantee is there that its spiritual experiences are not illusions? Including even its absorbed self-experience of the Supreme Self, which is connected to us as unreal, which is conceded to us as unreal, unreally real. But if cosmos is untrue, our experience of the cosmic consciousness of the universal self of Brahman as all these things, or as the self of all these beings, the one in all, one of its terms of an illusion on a constitution of Maya, this term, the cosmic term, has to crumble. So ultimately you will go to that point where you say even the experience of the self. That's exactly what Buddha, at least Hinayan Buddhism does that. Not Mahayan. Mahayan is integrative, synthetic. But Hinayan is about that. There is nothing which is true. Here you may experience God. Even that is an illusion. Ultimately even Shankara's extreme says that. So people say, why do they worship the God? They say within this vyavarik, there is a role. Pray to them, they will take care of you. But remember, this is only a working arrangement. Ultimately, they don't have any reality. So this is a question. So an uncompromising theory of illusion solves no problem of our existence. It only cuts the problem out for the individual, not for the cosmos certainly, by showing him a way of exit in its extreme form and affect our being. And its action become null and without sanction. Its experience, aspiration, endeavor lose their significance. All the one incommunicable relationless truth exceeded, and in turning away to it becomes equated with illusion of being. So everything becomes an illusion, including the experience of God. The theory of illusion cuts the knot of the world problem. It does not disentangle it. It is an escape, not a solution. A flight of the spirit is not a sufficient victory for the being embodied in the world of the becoming. So this is what we have been. So why Sri Aurobindo went to that point? All this experience he had. Because he wants the to make sense of all this. Like you have, oh, this is a pearl, this is a diamond, this is a ordinary bead, this is a... But is there something on which all this can be strung? That is the supermind. That's why he repeatedly speaks about supramental is the mediating link between the one and the many. If you don't enter there, you can leap into the Sachidananda even at the level of the mind. But one cannot solve the cosmic riddle. This is what we were sharing yesterday. This is the supreme experience which gathers together all experience. Now he takes us to the synthesis that we have to find that self where God and nature grow true and one. In the truth of a supreme and all reconciling oneness, illusionism unifies by eliminating. It deprives all knowledge and experience except the one supreme merger of reality and significance. Therefore, he says, a single decisive spiritual experience may undo a whole edifice of reasonings and conclusions affected by the logical intelligence. This was the experience that he had, the divine in everything, everywhere, and that's where the basis starts. What does Sri Krishna tell him? I am not only in the lawyer who is fighting for you, I am in the lawyer who is opposing you. In his speech of Sanatana Dharma, he says, even those who oppose me are doing my work. It's so powerful. Uttar Pada Bhashan. He says, what Sri Krishna told Sri Aurobindo. He says that, well, not only those who are speaking of Sanatana Dharma, even those who are opposing it are doing my work because it cannot be otherwise. It is so powerful, so liberating. See how Duryodhan did a great work. He brought together all of them, all the evil and wicked people together. So this is how the divine plan works. So it is not dependent ultimately on anyone. And finally, there are 100 ways of approaching the supreme reality, and as is the nature of the way taken, so will be the nature of the ultimate experience to which one passes into the into that which is ineffable. And based on the experience, we develop systems and we develop all kinds of theories and philosophies. A greater passage or a greater affirmation to extinguish self in non-being or to pass through the double experience of cosmic consciousness and nirvana of world consciousness in the one existence of the greater divine union and unity which holds both these realizations in its vast integral reality. Therefore, the statement of Sri Aurobindo makes perfect. You know, when in evening talks he is asked, what is the condition needed for the supramental descent? He says, you won't understand. First he tells everyone. Then he says, you tell us, we'll try to understand. So he says, you have to first ascend to the plane of the gods. So the disciple says, I didn't understand. Sri Aurobindo says, I said so. It's an amazing conversation. He says, I didn't understand. He says, I said so. So what is the plane of the gods? Is the overmind. That's where the two are meeting. If you don't have that experience, you cannot understand. The whole mystery remains the mystery. You can have the experience of Sachidananda. You can have experience of the divine in one angle through the Jnana Yoga, through the Bhakti Yoga, through the Karma Yoga, through Hatha Yoga, Raja Yoga, all kinds of new yogas. As many persons, so many yogas. But you cannot find the synthesis. That's what Sri Aurobindo is seeking. And that's why he did the tapasya of the supermind. He could have easily, after nirvana, he could have said, I have realized what Buddha has realized. I'll give the sermon. Instead of giving sermon, he gave a few lectures and then went away. I mean, went away to Pondicherry. He could have just given sermons after that. Buddha gave sermon on the mount. I mean, not the mount, but Sarnath. Why? Because he wants to understand on one side this is true, on the other side this is true. What is it that reconciles them? Now we understand the whole sense of the synthesis. A supreme experience which affirms and includes the truth of all spiritual experience gives to each its own absolute, integralizes all knowledge and experience in a supreme reality, might be the one step further, that is at once a larger, illuminating and transforming truth of all things and a highest infinite transcendence. So, and he closes, we'll close with this. All spiritual experiences are true, but they point towards some highest and widest reality which admits their truth and exceeds it. We'll stop here and come back. This line we can, because that's where we had on this very page. But the consciousness might be called to go further and see again all it has left in the light of a new spiritual vision. So in that ascension toward the divine, we leave behind many things. But then we return back after discovering. It may recover the truth of all things in the truth of the absolute. It may reconcile the negation of nirvana and the affirmation of the cosmic consciousness in a single regard of that of which both are the self-expressions. That's why, because most of these yogis, they don't talk of cosmic consciousness. And without cosmic consciousness, one cannot understand the mystery of the individual and its relation with the divine as absolute. And so he closes by saying, in the passage from mental to overmind cognition, this many-sided unity is the leading experience. This is what Sri Ramakrishna realized. He went from one side, he realized you find God. He tried to practice Hanuman sadhana, he grew a little tail. He did Islamic Allah Allah and he realized. He went through the way of Rama Rama and through Nirgun, through Sagun, all these experiences. That's why Sri Aurobindo speaks of him so highly. At the overmind level, the synthesis starts, but that last step still missing. But he went very far in that pursuit. At least all the different experiences he could reconcile. But the experience of that with this is the last step. That is not possible at the overmind, but you get a clue. So he says that in the passage from mental to overmind cognition, this many-sided unity is the leading experience. The whole manifestation assumes the appearance of a singular and mighty harmony which reaches its greatest completeness when the soul stands on the border between overmind and supermind and looks back with a total view upon existence. So this is Sri Aurobindo's vision of the reality, which is ultimately reality by definition is that which and he says in Savitri these three lines, these two must be left behind as all must be till we arrive where world and God grow true and one. So we have to reach that point. I mean, he has reached that point. He is giving it to us. We have to only open and receive it. Though innate intuition tells us that this cannot be just illusion. Something in us tells us. But that is the point where world is. So how the divine looks at us is very different. And we'll come to that after the break. After 5 minutes we'll come, because today before 7 we want to pack up because of another program. Thank you.